And this is NPR News. I'm Mike Mulcahy. Thanks for tuning in today. It's always hard to find daycare that you can afford for kids, but in some parts of rural Minnesota, finding daycare for infants is almost impossible. Research from the Center for Rural Policy and Development shows a massive daycare shortage, especially in the northern and central parts of the state. In northwestern Minnesota alone, they estimate about 2,500 children need daycare and can't get it. During this hour, we want to take a closer look at the daycare shortage in rural Minnesota, what's behind it, who's feeling it, and whether there's a solution. And we'd like to hear from you with your experiences and questions. You can join the conversation by giving us a call at 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. If it's easier to call toll-free, use the number 1-800-242-2828. 1-800-242-2828. Joining me are three guests. John Enger is a reporter for NPR News who looked into this issue after he and his wife struggled to find daycare for their new baby. He's in Bemidji. Marnie Werner is the interim director of the Center for Rural Policy and Development, the group that did the research I just cited. She joins us today from Mankato. And Jim Koppel is assistant commissioner for Children and Family Services at the Minnesota Department of Human Services, and he's with me in the studio. Again, you can get your question in or tell us what it's been like for you to find daycare, 651-227-6000. And John Enger, I'm going to start with you. You covered this story for NPR. As a parent, what was your experience?
Well, my wife and I actually got really lucky at first. We happened to call the right daycare provider at the right time, and our son's schedule slotted really nicely into her schedule. So I sort of had this idea that it might not actually be that hard to get daycare. But then around the time I started reporting this story, our provider decided to leave the business. We started looking again. I wasn't too worried at first, because I thought it wasn't all that hard. But then I was talking to all these parents and experts and doing interviews, and they're telling me horror stories. I mean, people quitting their jobs, moving closer to their in-laws, people deciding not to have kids at all because they know there's not going to be daycare. And it turns out that's what's normal up here, not me getting lucky, but people having a really hard time. So it was a little demoralizing.
Yeah. What kind of stress did it put on your family?
You know, it's been stressful, but I know a lot of people have it worse. By the time my provider actually closes down, my son's going to be close to a year old. And that, according to state regulations, at that point, it becomes a lot easier to get daycare because the kids aren't listed as infants at that point. So it's going to be a lot easier. Worst case scenario, we'll have to be really flexible for a month or two.
Mm-hmm. And as you talk to the daycare providers and some of the other parents, what kind of things did they tell you?
Well, first I should say that I've gotten a huge number of emails about this daycare reporting. Obviously, I talked to a lot of people beforehand, but it's just been a flood ever since. People are really passionate about this issue because if you can't find daycare, everything basically falls apart. And out here, that's really what the issue is that I've seen is daycare is... It's just a massive shortfall. It's not prohibitively expensive. It's $20 or $30 a day. It's just really hard to find.
Well, I guess that $20 or $30 a day must not be enough for the providers to keep doing it, to keep in business, right?
Yeah, with overhead, I talked to one daycare provider up in Black Duck who charged kind of mid-20s a day, and she barely could keep her head above water with the cost of overhead. She was making less money than she could make at a grocery store stocking shelves.
Wow. But the problem is if you raise the prices, then the parents can't afford it, right?
Especially in very rural places where the cost of living is pretty low and people don't make much money.
Hmm. So have you heard of any possible solutions to this in your reporting?
You know, a few solutions were tossed out. There's one town in my region that's working with local employers to try and get kind of a loan forgiveness program to help in-home daycare providers start up. But the problem is that would be like a one-time infusion of money, and it wouldn't help them stay above water in the long term. It seems like the only real solution is to pay daycare providers more. But again, that's very difficult to do.
That's John Enger. He's a reporter with NPR News who has looked into this story about the shortage of daycare in rural areas. That's what we're talking about this hour, and we'd like to hear from you, too, especially if you have experience looking for daycare, trying to find daycare, not being able to find a situation that works for your family. Give us a call. You can use the toll-free number. That's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828, or if you want to just use the regular line, that's 651-227-6000. 651-227-6000. Thanks a lot, John. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
We're going to continue the hour with Marnie Werner, who's the interim director of the Center for Rural Policy and Development, and Jim Koppel. He's the assistant commissioner for Children and Family Services at the Minnesota Department of Human Services. And Marnie, let me start with you. You looked into the situation. I mentioned some of the findings from your research, but give us a broader look at what you found when you looked into the state of daycare in rural Minnesota.
Sure. Well, when we first started looking at this and we looked at the difference between, you know, how many providers there were and the capacity that they had back in 2006, you know, 10, 11 years ago, and compared it to each year down to 2016 and now 2017, the capacity and the number of providers just kept dropping, particularly in what's called the family child care group. Those are the people that we think of as in-home daycare, you know, daycare providers who take kids into their homes. On the other side, you have center child care, which is, you know, your daycare center. And those are actually going up in number and capacity. The trouble was that wasn't going up fast enough to make up for the number of in-home providers that were leaving the business. And it varied a lot between the Twin Cities and Greater Minnesota.
Hmm. And did you get a sense why those in-home providers were having such a tough time?
Yeah, I think it's just what we call a market failure. They couldn't make enough money to cover their overhead costs, like John was talking about. Depending on where you are in the state, a family's income can vary quite a bit. And as you get farther from the metro area, incomes get lower. And so people can't afford to pay as much for their child care. The problem is for a provider, their costs of providing that child care isn't that much different from the Twin Cities to, say, Black Duck. And so their costs are just as high as they would be in the cities, but the families looking for their child care can't afford to pay as much. And so they just start losing money, and they just can't, you know, no matter how much they want to keep doing this, they just can't afford to stay in business.
Mm-hmm. Jim Koppel, a failure of the market system? Is that what we're seeing here?
Well, we are kind of seeing what I think of as a perfect storm in the sense that about 75% of the children in Minnesota under age 5 have all parents in the workforce. So that's a huge we lead the nation in a number of heads of households in the workforce, especially women in the workforce, mothers in the workforce. And the result is continuing growth and need for our child care. Since 2003, when we had a dramatic cut in child care, and I think began this evolving breakdown of the system, we've lost a provider a day every day since 2003.
Wow.
If you can think of it that way, that's how big the drop has been. Just as an example, I'd say there are about 60% or so of the providers left that were here 15 years ago. We serve fewer children on our child care programs than we did 20 years ago. So the system has had money and resources pulled away. We pay providers at a much lower level from the state than we did 20 years ago. And so as that erosion has occurred, the need has grown. And I would add one other thing into it is that parent expectation of what child care is has grown as well. We know so much about brain science in babies and how much, you know, 80 to 90% of the brain develop by age three. We want the very best for our children. So the expectations have also grown. So all of that. And compensation isn't there. Workforce isn't there. The result is this current environment.
And you mentioned that the state played a role in this. Is that in terms of subsidizing parents or giving them a tax break? How does that work?
It works a number of ways. And the most visible program we have is a child care assistance program. And the child care assistance program is a subsidized program for parents, so that helps pay some of the cost for child care for parents who are eligible. But we only serve about, I'll put it this way, there are 15,000 children who are eligible for that subsidy that are not on the program because the program has waiting lists, has reached capacity. So we don't serve the need there. So the unaffordability of child care, which holds down the reimbursements for child care because parents can't pay, is affected by the fact that we don't fully fund our child care need as a state. But it's bigger than that. There's no one single area where you can point and say, if only we did that, we'd have it fixed. Loan forgiveness for providers is a big deal. We need a workforce. We need young people to be going into the early childhood education, and they're not. Because it doesn't pay. And so there's a lot of factors that play into this.
Marnie, I wonder if you have, Marnie Werner, if you have seen that issue about the workforce, just that there aren't qualified people out there who are interested in doing this kind of work.
Yeah, it's a little hard to find the numbers, but workforce is the biggest holdup. It's the biggest expense for child care, particularly child care centers. And when your average pay is under $15 an hour for people who are almost, you know, virtually qualified to be teachers, there's just kind of, it's a no-brainer which one you're going to do. And so it is just, it's with our current workforce shortage as it is, it's just discouraging for people who would like to go into the field.
Well, let's take a call. We have some callers wanting to join in here. Scott is on the line from Aitken. Scott, go ahead.
Yes, I. My wife and I had to make the tough decision that I would quit work because we realized with two kids in daycare that we were making $100 less a month than I made at my full-time job, at my part-time job.
After expenses.
So, it made no sense for me to go to work and pay more money just to go to work.
Wow. Well, thanks for the call. Is that a typical situation that you've been hearing about, Jim Koppel?
Well, I wouldn't say anything's necessarily typical. I would put that in a category of there are a lot of people who continue to work in their profession for professional reasons. You know, they want a career. They don't want to take the time off. But the expense of a couple of kids in childcare while you're in the beginning of your career, which, you know, most parents are young, younger, early in their career, not making the salaries that they hope to someday. And it may not be a break even or a loss, but it's certainly a marginal proposition for many families.
So you're just not getting ahead. I mean, the cost of care is so high, as this caller said, might as well just quit the job and take care of the kids.
Well, that's one option. And what you don't want to have happen is people being forced into that situation. You have a economic decision that he made there, and that's troubling. But it also is even more troubling when someone has to quit their job because they don't have anyone to take care of their kids.
We were talking about the workforce, the child care workforce, a couple of minutes ago, and Marnie Werner, you said that some of these daycare providers have to be almost like teachers, but they're not getting paid like teachers. Is that right? Jim Koppel, let me ask you, what are the qualifications required for somebody in this business?
Sure. Well, it varies a great deal. But what happens is in, especially you'll see this in centers, child care centers, we have the federal government mandates every state set up a quality improvement for their child care. They want higher quality child care. We want, again, recognizing the importance of the of healthy social, emotional, early childhood and the brain development that happens there, you want the highest quality you can get. So we have a rating system called Parent Aware, where you can become a 4-star rated provider, whether you're in-home or a center. And in order to do that, you need to meet certain qualifications. And that can include the education of the provider, of the teachers, the lead teachers in the classrooms in these centers, as well as in home. So, yes, it could be a college education. Again, I would say I'm not – that doesn't bother me from a perspective of the workforce. We want a highly trained workforce working with our youngest children because we know what's at stake. Mm-hmm. At the same time, then we need to step up and pay that workforce like we do any other educator working with children and be ready to meet their needs as well.
And Marnie Werner, that seems like one of the sort of paradoxes here. You know, if you're a parent, you obviously want to leave your child with somebody who's really well qualified and can do a good job. On the other hand, you might not have the money to afford that, especially in a rural area where the jobs just aren't there that pay much.
Absolutely. And, you know, part of the issue that relates to that is that Greater Minnesota is just playing a lot more dependent on that in-home childcare where it's just, you know, the individual person looking after kids in her home. There aren't nearly as many centers in Greater Minnesota as there are in the Twin Cities. And in fact, Aiken County, where our caller just called from, is one of several counties that don't have any child care centers at all. And so, you know, we found in our research that it seems that in Greater Minnesota, the problem is just trying to find any child care, where in the metro area, it's affordable child care. Mm-hmm. And so that's another aspect of the issue.
651-227-6000 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation about daycare, especially in Greater Minnesota, rural Minnesota, where it can be hard to find. 651-227-6000. Let's take another caller, Elizabeth in Detroit Lakes.
Hello.
Hi.
So I currently don't have any small children, but I have a lot of people that I work with that do have small children. And it's a matter of balancing affordability and the responsibilities of what it takes to be a licensed daycare provider. In my younger years, I was a licensed daycare provider for about 10 plus years, but in the metro area. I would never do that in the northern Minnesota.
Why not?
It's the process of getting licensed and all of the needs that you need to meet to get licensed and be an appropriate daycare provider are almost insurmountable compared to when you're taking in people who may be working just minimum wage jobs at Walmart or Jimmy John's or delivering pizza. And their hours are that they require care because they have to work those jobs are not manageable. Mm-hmm. It's not like you can have an 8-to-5 daycare. When you're doing an in-home daycare, you have to have pretty much the availability of when your parents have availability. And it's not like you can say, okay, at 5:30, my home daycare is shut down. Mm-hmm. But the ability of a person working at Domino's or Walmart or Jimmy John's is not worth the sacrifice of your own personal life.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call. Marnie Werner, it sounds like she's kind of put her finger on the problem with finding qualified people who want to provide daycare.
Well, and she really has. If you look at what we think of as the traditional two-parent family, it's hard enough for them to find daycare. If you are anywhere outside that sphere, say you have a child with special needs, or you're an immigrant family, you're a single parent, or a low-income family like she was talking about, that just makes it exponentially more difficult. I've talked to people who have talked about children with special needs finding daycare for them, and it's virtually impossible.
Hmm. Jim Koppel, is that a familiar story to you too?
Yes, it is, unfortunately. And I think if we look at this as a total, this is an evolving marketplace that started, in the 70s. I can remember hearing about when I was in college in the early 70s and thinking, well, that'll never happen because everybody used to stay home.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't happen anymore. And because we haven't intentionally stopped taking a look at this and saying, what is our early childhood policy in Minnesota? What is it that we want best for families with our youngest children, birth to three, birth to five? And what are we doing about it? What's our goal? What are we going to do about it? And I think that's a conversation that's been long overdue, and that we are having in fits and starts at times, but we tend to try to find a silver bullet, a solution. And it's really, as you are hearing, it's a complicated process. There's regulations that need to be reviewed. That may keep people out of the business. There's money that needs to, in terms of reimbursement and cost to provide, the cost to parents, the quality that our youngest children, the quality environments that they're in so that they have the maximum healthy development. All of that together is an early childhood system. And we haven't really had that discussion yet.
We're talking about daycare, child care, especially in rural areas. It can be awfully hard to find. Join the conversation at 651-227-6000. Let's go back to the phones. Tabitha is on the line in St. Paul.
Hi, am I on?
Yes, you are. Go ahead.
I just had a question because I was just shocked to hear that we've lost a provider a day since 2003. And I'm just so curious as to like what the overhead cost of daycare is, because I'm spending like $1,200 a month on daycare right now, and my provider is licensed for 10 kids. So like that sounds like a pretty healthy amount of money coming in for full-time childcare. And so, and I don't doubt that they're expenses, but I am just curious as to why, if that's like what people are paying out of pocket for childcare, where's the breakdown there for what people are actually bringing in?
And Tabitha, $1,200 a month for one child?
That's $1,200 for one child full-time and one part-time, 2 days a week.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Let's see if we can get some answers here. Let me start with Marnie Werner. First of all, can providers in rural areas charge that much?
Probably not. Not on their wages. That just goes, back to the idea that affordability is an issue in the metro area. If you're making the income, you can, afford that kind of that kind of rate. I don't have the rates in front of me, but they were considerably, the average rates were considerably higher in the metro area than in greater Minnesota. And so, $1,200 a month breaks down to about, if I'm doing my math right, about $40 a day. And so that's quite a bit if you're on, say, a $35,000 income.
Mm-hmm. And what about overhead costs? We've been talking, I think, a lot about in-home providers in rural areas. Are the overhead costs less for an in-home provider than for a center, or are they kind of the same?
Well, Jim could probably speak better to this than me, but when you're doing a center, you have to have the building. The regulations are very specific about how the building needs to be arranged. the amount of space per child, if you're going to be providing food, the type of kitchen and the type of equipment that you need, the type of toys and whatnot that you need for the child. And so it's fairly prescriptive.
Mm-hmm. Jim Koppel, what are the differences between what's required in an in-home setting versus a center?
Well, I think, you know, from a money perspective, what the caller mm-hmm. was asking about, you know, it seems, and this is part of that perfect storm scenario, is parents are paying a lot for childcare. We say, you know, when your child goes to college, the tuition at a state university is on average less than your childcare costs are.
It'd be a relief almost.
well, yeah, it doesn't feel that way.
Yeah,
but,
right.
But at the same time, so you have this cost to the parent, and you have childcare providers who are not making a wage which is going to keep them in the business. Now, what's that mean? Well, for a center, you know, you build a building, you have those costs, you know, the ongoing cost of running, maintaining that building. And then if they are trying to recruit high quality teachers and college graduates, et cetera, that they want to be a top tier, highly rated system or childcare center, then, you know, those are expensive too. Mm-hmm. So centers generally are much more expensive mm-hmm. than in home. However, when you get in home, you know, I had my two children in home for the childcare provider we chose. It was expensive, and I know she didn't make any money. She didn't get rich doing it. Mm. There is ongoing costs of the things that you do to your home to make it ready, the things you have to continue to do every night to clean and upkeep, as well as the meals. Field trips, the extra things you try to do for the children, the books, et cetera. It's hard to know that, you know, there's a reason why schools who have 1,000 kids in them mm-hmm. have some leverage. You know, they have a lot of kids, and there's some degree of savings in that regard. When mm-hmm. you have 8-10 kids, they're coming part-time to full-time. You have to have a certain age level for each one. Because you're limited as to how many kids you can take in each age level. So, and managing that with parents and collecting the bills,
mm-hmm.
it's a tough business.
Yeah.
And but it doesn't feel that way to a paying parent who's
just sees
also
the cost.
Seeing a huge cost.
Yeah.
That's what makes this so challenging.
Squeezed
today.
On both ends, basically.
Exactly.
Let's take another caller. John is on the line from Isanti County. Hey, John, go ahead.
Hello. My wife runs daycare from our home. Just to comment on a few things about the costs. All of her income goes right back into the business. The other thing that I'd like to comment on is the stifling amount that the county can come in whenever they want, and the changes that come out of the legislature. We are told that anyone over the age of 13 that lives in the home or could be present during daycare hours will need to go through a level 2 federal background check starting next year. That's fingerprinting for my 13-year-old kids.
Mm-hmm. Jim Koppel, too much regulation, over-regulated?
Depends who you talk to. Certainly in need of review, and I think that's been agreed upon by all who have come to the table to talk about this. In response to the specific issue that gentleman raises about background checks for 13-year-olds, that is being changed this year at the legislature, and those 13-year-olds will go through the traditional, or those families with those children will go through the traditional check that we've had in place that does not include the fingerprinting and the FBI background check. So that is a change that occurred in response to what we thought was a part of the federal regulations, but we have some leeway in that, and that's how we're approaching it.
Mm-hmm.
So he won't need to worry about that.
So did the state just overreact to what the feds put down, or was it an honest misunderstanding? Or
I think it was probably – a process where we do need to do fingerprinting for providers, and that is a federal regulation. And I think the other people in the household at, you know, as this gentleman was talking about, we swept in with that and then took a closer look and said, no, we don't need to bring everybody in, just those, just the provider. So that in that case, we can do a more traditional background check. There are still background checks on those children, but it's not that comprehensive.
Okay. Marnie Werner, what else would you, do you think the legislature could do or the state could do to help solve this problem?
Well, one thing is, you know, figuring out ways to help with the costs. And but in terms of in greater Minnesota, it is like Jim said before, there isn't a silver bullet necessarily, just because there are so many differences from one community to the next, you know, of what's the average income there and what's the mix of employers and childcare and the average age of the community and the size of the community, because a lot of your daycare also depends on the population density. You know, how are there enough kids in town to support a daycare? And so a lot of communities are getting together, you know, really for the first time, the nonprofits and the parents and the providers and the businesses, the employers and the churches are getting together and figuring out what they can do, figuring out exactly what the problems might be and what they can do as a community to come up with a solution. And so I guess as far as the state's involvement in that is the grant programs are great, but also to just be aware that people are trying, you know, communities are trying to come up with solutions and to not do anything to screw that up, basically.
Not get in the way. Jim Koppel, what do you think?
Oh, I agree 100%. I think across Minnesota, and I've been able to go visit one in particular that I recall in Franklin, Minnesota, a town of 500 or 600 people that recently built a center. They had three of the four family providers, in-home providers, leave the business, and they were strapped. A group of leaders, community leaders, got together, brought in the school district, the county, and the city, leveraged their resources, and built a child care center that was operational within 1 year, serving over 40 children. That's from neighboring communities as well. But that, I think what Marnie brings up is really a good point, and that is at this time right now, communities need to get together. I met recently with Southwest Initiative Fund in Southwest Minnesota, and they are working in many communities to try to find these very solutions that Marnie's mentioning, whether it's a school district is leading it, whether it's a large employer in town. But there needs to be innovation and community response, and then the state needs to be a partner in that process. We need to go and look at what they're trying to do. It may be outside the box of what we've done to date, but look at it and see how we can accommodate that at the same time, make sure that the quality of the child care and safety, et cetera, are being met.
And I know there are proposals in front of the legislature for grants to try to create more availability. Is there anything else on the regulatory front that the legislature is looking at that you either think is a good idea or concerns you in terms of looking at this problem?
Well, I think there's a number of regulatory things that are happening this year. And I'm not in that field. I don't oversee the regulation side. I oversee the program side and the workforce side. But we do a lot of communicating. And I know there are a lot of changes that are being made in the regulatory side, in response to, especially from in-home providers, in response to the feeling of being over-regulated or what is, in some cases, county to county, there's inconsistency on how it's done to make it more consistent across the state. But I would also say that the other things that we haven't talked about is the reimbursement. And so, for instance, 20 years ago, in our child care assistance program, we paid 75% of providers their rates. In other words, we did a market survey and we paid at the 75th percentile. We lined them up from lowest to highest and we went up to the 75th percentile and paid up to that rate. Today, we pay at the 25th percentile.
Hmm.
So only 25% roughly of providers get their full rate. And then above that, it's compromised.
Hmm.
So you can see the decrease in the reimbursement rate. Secondly, we base it on a 2011 market survey, which is way out of date. So we're way behind. The federal law says we have to pay those providers at a most recent survey, which will help. And hopefully this year we'll get some help in that regard because there is some federal money available, and I think we will be able to bring those rates up a little. But it's just an example of how we've fallen behind, mm-hmm. how we have compromised okay. some of these providers.
And Marnie Werner, I'll give you the last word here. As you look at what the legislature has before it, do you think they're going to make some changes on the regulatory side that will help with this problem?
I know this year they are looking at a lot more grants, like Jim was saying. I think they're also, I haven't been looking very close at it, but I think they're also looking at ways to just lower that aggravation factor, such as that inconsistency, like Jim was saying, mm-hmm. from county to county, because the DHS has the regulations, the state legislature sets those regulations, but the regulations are enforced at the county level. And so it's those inspectors that you hear about where their consistency in checking up on providers varies a lot from one county to the next. And that's where I really hear a lot of complaints about.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. It was a good discussion. That's Marnie Werner. She's the interim director of the Center for Rural Policy and Development. Jim Koppel is here as well. He is assistant commissioner for Children and Family Services at the Minnesota Department of Human Services. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.